This week on the Electronic Intifada podcast, Gaza fishermen protest as Israel breaks its pledge to stop attacks. Israel arrests Palestinian activists to, quote, finish the colonization project. News from the global boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement as the student government at the University of California at Riverside passes a resolution calling on the university to divest from U.S. companies profiting from Israel's rights violations. We'll speak with two leading members of UC Riverside's Students for Justice in Palestine about what the resolution calls for.
As SJP at UCR, we're going to set up a special meeting with the chancellor and see what can be done on her end and the administrative level to kind of make this less of a symbolic gesture and actually get some money moved.
And a massive advertising campaign launched by Palestine Solidarity and human rights organizations in Washington, D.C., calls for an end to the $30 billion U.S. aid package to Israel as the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee's annual policy gala converges. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor for the Electronic Intifada in Berkeley. We begin in the Gaza Strip. A flotilla of approximately 50 boats set sail off the coast of the Gaza Strip last week as Palestinian fishermen and activists launched a direct campaign against the Israeli Navy's attacks on Palestinian fishermen. They also demanded that Israel return 36 fishing boats it has seized. The protest was organized by the Union of Agricultural Work Committees. The Electronic Intifada contributor Joe Catrone reported, quote, "The event followed a series of protests that the Union of Agricultural Work Committees mounted last month as part of a global day of action for boycotts of Israeli agricultural companies." Catrone added, quote, "For the several hundred fishermen who spent their mornings in the Seaborne rally accompanied by international activists and television cameras, it offered a rare window of relative safety at sea." Israel gave a commitment in its November 2012 ceasefire agreement with Palestinian resistance groups to, quote, "stop all hostilities in the Gaza Strip, land, sea, and air, including incursions and targeting of individuals, and refrain from restricting residents' free movements and targeting residents in border areas." The Hamas-run administration in Gaza announced the next day that negotiations for the truce in Cairo had expanded the 3 nautical mile fishing limit imposed by Israel as part of its naval blockade of the Gaza Strip to 6 nautical miles. But, Catrone reported, attacks on fishermen quickly resumed. According to Zakaria Bakr, a fisherman who facilitates the union's 5 local fishing committees in the Gaza Strip, Israel has captured 9 more boats since the November ceasefire agreement was struck. Quote, "They have kept more boats since the ceasefire than between 1994 and 2005, he said, adding that since the truce, at least 5 additional boats have been shot and 3 fishermen wounded. Bakr added, quote, "As for the boats the Israelis capture, they shoot nearly all of them first." Mossad Bakr, a relative of Zakaria and also a fisherman, said, quote, "I was injured when 2 Israeli warships approached my boat on December 17th. One circled it, creating turbulence, while the other sprayed it with gunfire. A bullet struck his left thigh," he added. "Then they arrested me and confiscated my boat, which is now in Ashdod, a port in Israel." Those were excerpts from a longer report by Joe Catrone. For much more on this story, visit our front page at electronicintifada.net. This week, the Electronic Intifada contributor Gillian Kessler-Damour reported that local human rights and activism organizations in the occupied West Bank are documenting increased pressure on Palestinian human rights defenders. While protests continue across Palestine in support of the thousands of Palestinian prisoners languishing in Israeli jails, some of them remaining on extended hunger strikes, the arrest, interrogation, and detention of activists and organizers is, quote, "a way to break the principle of solidarity between the Palestinian people and the Palestinian prisoners, and the case of the Palestinian prisoners in the conscience of the Palestinian people," said Murad Jadallah, a legal researcher with Adamir, a Ramallah-based prisoner support group. In her report, Kessler-Damour writes about the arrest, detention, and torture of Jadallah's colleague Ayman Nasser. Quote, "In October 2012, Israeli soldiers arrested Nasser from his home in the West Bank village of Safa, near Ramallah, in the middle of the night. He was taken to Jerusalem's infamous Russian compound prison, Moskobia in Arabic, and kept in isolation for weeks of interrogation. Ademir reported that he was held in painful, stress-inducing positions during interrogation sessions that sometimes lasted for more than 20 hours, was barred from sleeping, psychologically intimidated, and frequently denied access to a lawyer and to proper medical care. The Israeli authorities eventually accused Nasser of organizing and participating in demonstrations as a member of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine and recruiting others to join the group. Through the use of torture, the Israelis also coerced witnesses, other Palestinian prisoners held in Israel, to incriminate Nasser. These witnesses later testified in front of an Israeli military court that they gave false statements. Jadala explained, quote, "This kind of arrest and attacks is a collective punishment for the Palestinian people for supporting the prisoners. They want to say to the Palestinian society that the Israeli forces are able to arrest Palestinians and to punish those that will support them. It's a message for the prisoners that even these kinds of organizations, such as Ademir, are not protected, so don't hope to get help from these organizations," unquote. When asked about the arrest, detention, and interrogation of another human rights defender, Hassan Karaja of Stop the Wall, Jamal Juma of the same organization said that Israel is, quote, "trying to be aggressive and to finish their colonial project in the West Bank. They don't want any Palestinian organized reaction. Anybody that they think can be influential on the street with the people, of course he will be targeted because they want to continue their project quietly." Kessler Damore added in her report, quote, "Tens of thousands took to the streets across Palestine earlier this week to show their anger at a Palestinian prisoner's death in Israeli prison. 30-year-old Arafat Jaradat, a father of two from the West Bank village of Sa'ir, was killed in Megiddo prison on February 23rd. An autopsy revealed signs of torture on Jaradat's body, including laceration marks, broken bones, bruises, and cuts. Quote, Jaradat's death has drawn attention to what many say is the widespread use of torture in Israeli interrogation centers and prisons, medical neglect of prisoners, and the lack of accountability with which Israeli interrogations operate. According to Israeli human rights group B'Tselem, between 2001 and 2011, 700 complaints were filed to the Israeli Attorney General on behalf of detainees alleging torture was used against them. To date, not a single criminal investigation was launched into these complaints. Those were excerpts of a longer report by Gillian Kessler Damore. To read more about this story, go to electronicintifada.net. And now we go to news from the global boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. Despite years of aggressive attempts by Israel lobby groups to silence and intimidate student Palestine solidarity organizations across the U.S., campus activists are more determined than ever to continue to speak up, speak out, and enact actual change regarding university investments in companies which profit from Israel's violations of Palestinian rights. On Wednesday night, the student government at the University of California at Riverside passed a resolution to, quote, "further examine its assets and UC assets for investments in companies that provide military support for or weaponry to support the occupation of Palestinian territory or facilitate the building or maintenance of the illegal wall or the demolition of Palestinian homes or facilitate the building, maintenance, or economic development of illegal Israeli settlements on occupied Palestinian territory." The resolution, which passed by an 11-5 vote, also called upon UC Riverside's administration, the University of California Treasury, and the UC Riverside Foundation to divest their holdings from companies such as Raytheon, Hewlett-Packard, L3 Communications, Caterpillar, General Electric, SodaStream, and others, and that, quote, "if it is found that UC Riverside funds or UC funds are being invested in any of the above-mentioned companies, UCR will divest and will advocate that the UC system divests all stocks and securities of such companies with the goal of maintaining the divestment in the case of said companies until they cease these specific practices. Moreover, UC Riverside will not make further investments and will advocate that the UC system not make further investments in any companies materially supporting or profiting from Israel's occupation in the above-mentioned ways," end quote. Meanwhile, a similar vote on divestment began also on Wednesday night at the University of California at San Diego, but was postponed and will resume next week. We'll keep our eyes on that. Joining us to talk about this divestment resolution victory are two members of Students for Justice in Palestine at UC Riverside, SJP President Shadi Matar and SJP Board Member Amal Ali. Shadi and Amal, thank you so much for being with us today on the Electronic Intifada podcast.
No problem. Hi, everyone.
Happy to be here.
Amal, if you could begin by talking about how the resolution was organized up to this point and the vote that happened on Wednesday night.
I'd say it was maybe about a month and a half ago when we really seriously put down ideas for divestment. Before it was like, okay, should we do it this year? Are the senators in a position to do it? Are we in a position to do it? Let's wait and see. Let's test out the waters. And after an SJP West conference, actually, where we met with SJP members from all over California, Shadi and I decided let's put this to work. Let's make this happen. So he and one of our other board members, who's a senator, they started lobbying. And meanwhile, my job, or the task that I took on, was to contact student organizations and faculty, basically members within the community who could support from outside of the associated students. Those are basically our main ways of getting this across, of getting this done, was through personal contact with people. And of course, we were in contact with people from UC Irvine daily. I had so many phone calls logged at the most absurd times from people from Irvine who were giving us the most amazing advice and guiding us along the way.
And of course, when we talk about UC Irvine, of course, three of the Irvine 11, the students who were prosecuted and convicted for basically exercising their free speech rights and standing up in protest at an event on the campus, three of them went to UC Riverside. Just a few months ago, as you mentioned, UC Irvine's Associated Student Body voted in favor of urging the university to divest, and now it's been followed by the students at UC Riverside. We know that the intention of prosecuting the Irvine 11 was to intimidate students like these and you and others who follow into not speaking out about Israel's policies in Palestine. And now we have both universities here passing major divestment resolutions, which are very strongly and clearly worded. Talk about the significance of these resolutions in the face of these enormous, well-funded efforts of the Israel lobby and its local political counterparts to silence and criminalize protest.
I think it just shows the effectiveness of grassroots campaigns and how in today's society, you know, social media and all that stuff can really help boost grassroots and what's going on. I mean, that's really evident with, you know, when UC Irvine passed their divestment, we saw, you know, the Twitter going crazy. And then with ours, I checked the next day and how much, you know, the hashtag UCR divest was just so many retweets and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, it just goes to show you that people who are really dedicated, who really want to pass divestment, who really want it, you know, they don't need a paid incentive to do it, you know. I would say all the pro-Palestinian organizations, you know, are nonprofit, and everyone is doing it, to advocate for human rights, while, you know, the organizations that were against the bill or, you know, who are pro-Israeli, I mean, they have a financial backing behind it, and so their wallets may be into the cause of, you know, supporting Israel, but I really do believe that their hearts are not in it, and I believe that's where we have, you know, we had the advantage that day, was our hearts were in, and you could definitely tell by the arguments being thrown both ways. I mean, when ML went up to address the Senate, when I went to go address the Senate, and the rest of the members, you know, who came to talk and speak, advocating for the bill, you know, they didn't have note cards. They didn't have anything in front of them. They were speaking from the heart. They were speaking from, you know, things that they know, the facts, statistics, all this kind of stuff. Well, you know, on the other side, nearly all of them were just pulling out note cards or pre-written speeches or whatever. And I think that really, you know, the Senate really noted that and saw, well, these guys are just reading off of a pre-written note card or something pre-prepared for them. So I really do think, and I really, you know, I'm one of the most anti-cliche people, but heart really does beat everything, you know.
What kinds of testimonies did you and you, Amal, give at the Senate? What did you talk about?
I went through the process of requesting additional time to speak. So I had 7 days before the meeting, I had sent an email to the executive vice president requesting time, and I was given 10 minutes to speak. ML and the rest were given 2 minutes to speak each. The kind of the background scenes of that was they didn't want something like UC San Diego's divestment resolution to kind of go for us, where they were up till 3 a.m, you know, arguing about this, and the same stuff was just repeated over and over. So they only allowed 10 speakers to speak other than myself, 5 advocating for the bill and 5 against the resolution. And then if the senators still needed more testimony, they allowed an extension for that. So they allowed 4 more people after that. So a total of 14 speakers other than myself. So 7 advocating for it and 7 against it spoke. And I gave my 10-minute presentation, which I got a 4-minute extension at the end because I had a lot of material to cover. So I was given a 14-minute presentation where I had a slideshow that basically talked about what is apartheid, you know, using the example of South African apartheid because it is so, you know, it is the best example for that. Why there, you know, is there apartheid in Israel, in Palestine? And I used a lot of examples to justify that. You know, what does this bill actually do? You know, student organizations on our UCR campus who support it, faculty who support it, and, you know, just testimonies from all this kind of stuff to back it up.
And Amal, what did you say to the Student Senate?
Well, as Shadi said, it was brief. We were limited in our public comment. I was the first of public comment to come up, so it was kind of like I had to make sure it would be something that could solidify what Shadi presented rather than be any kind of counter-argument or a response to anything like that. My main point that I wanted to address the Senate with was that for those senators who were worried about staying neutral and who didn't want to get involved in politics, because that's something that's really important on our campus. The university that we attend markets itself on diversity and on coexistence and peaceful dialogue. We're very don't rock the boat. Senators are worried about getting involved in something political and, you know, becoming and not being neutral. So I had to address to them that being neutral is divestment, because right now we currently invest in only one side of this apparently two-sided conflict in their eyes. And that the solution was either to begin investing in Palestinian companies, which is obviously not feasible, or to de-invest from both sides and to stay completely out of it by the choice of the students, which it was. We had several student organizations backing us up, several faculty backing us up, UC Irvine and senators from all over the UC system supporting the resolution. I guess the take-home point was to make it less of a political issue and more of a, this is a student issue, this is something that we at the UC need to care about because we're students, not because we're going to save the world and free Palestine or whatever the case may be.
So now this is just, the resolution makes recommendations to the university administration and the University of California itself. How will the student government now follow up with the university, and when will reports and recommendations be made about the university's involvement in investment into these companies which profit from Israel's violations of Palestinian rights? What's the next step?
Quite promptly after the vote, the interim chancellor, Jane Conley, put out a statement, or her office put out a statement saying that we understand the student government put out a recommendation to divest from companies that support, you know, apartheid, but this is up to the UC Regent itself, which is up to the United States, which is up to, you know, the federal government and all that. So even though the student government, who is representative of 18,000 plus students, has passed this resolution, we cannot do this until the UC Regents recommend to this or follow this policy. So that was their response. But I would say the next steps are, one, to, you know, talk to our senators more, our student representatives, and tell them, hey, you know, thank you for voting on this. You're going to get a lot of heat from the other side, people who oppose this resolution, but, you know, you need to stand firm on your ground, and we thank you for what you've done and choosing the side of justice and anti-racism and anti-discrimination. Other than that, I think on our part, you know, as SJP at UCR, we're going to set up a special meeting with the chancellor and see what can be done, you know, on her end and the administrative level to kind of make this less of a symbolic gesture, but and actually get some money moved.
Shadi and Amal, what can you say have been the most effective strategies in your organizing and getting this resolution passed? What advice can you give to other student groups who are trying to do the same at their universities and colleges across the country?
Okay, so I would definitely say for any students who are thinking about organizing something like this, any SJPs across the country, across the UC system, wherever, who are thinking about divestment, but their campus is very, quote-unquote, polarized or very pro-Israeli, I would say just go for it. I mean, really just go for it. Try something. The BDS and divestment and all this stuff, it's not about the victories. It's about the attempts. If you try divestment, if you make a big stir, if you make a big fuss about it, and it doesn't, if it passes, that's great. You set out to do what you accomplished. If it doesn't pass, if it fails, whatever, you still made some noise. You let people know that, hey, something is going on. I'm against this, and people are shouting out against it. Strategies that I would recommend really is become part of your student government. I think that's the biggest key, is know the tricks of the trade. Go inside, learn how a meeting is run, learn what kind of forms you need to do, learn what kind of meetings you need to attend. If you can, be a student representative. I'm running to be a student senator for UCR this coming spring, and I'm very excited for that and to be able to represent my campus. So just get involved and just try it. Just work on a small BDS campaign if you can. Focus on one product and say, hey, we were able to remove this product from our campus. I think we need to focus on the larger funding of it. That's what I would say.
How can people follow Students for Justice in Palestine at UC Riverside and get more information?
The SJP Twitter account has been a little bit inactive, but we're getting back on that in light of everything. The handle for Twitter is @SJP_UCR. The website is in the process of being made. So many people have contacted me for a copy of the resolution, and I realize I can't keep emailing individuals. So I'm hoping that this weekend will turn out most of the work of the website, and within by the weekend or the end of the weekend, a website will be up, something simple where we can start spreading information about our SJP. And we're on Facebook, SJPUCR. That's where we do most of our main work for social media, I guess.
Great. And we will put the text of the resolution up on the Electronic Intifada along with this podcast, so our listeners and readers can take a look at this incredibly strong document that you put together, this resolution. Thank you so much for joining us, Shadi Matar and Amal Ali of the Students for Justice in Palestine at UC Riverside in Southern California. Thank you for being with us on the Electronic Intifada podcast.
Thank you.
And for other current news from the global boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, and to read more about the national and international student solidarity movements for Palestinian rights, check out our activism and BDS blog on electronicintifada.net. In other activism news, last week, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, or AIPAC, the largest Israel lobby group in the U.S., began its annual policy conference in Washington, D.C. AIPAC is a longtime target of Palestine solidarity activists who have protested and disrupted various fundraising and policy conferences. Activists and artists with several Palestine solidarity and human rights organizations launched advertising campaigns this week to coincide with the AIPAC conference, placing placards at metro stations which call for an end to the U.S.'s multi-billion-dollar aid package to Israel. The series of advertisements have been produced by a joint project of the U.S. Campaign to End the Israeli Occupation and the graphic design activism initiative Visualizing Palestine. In a joint press release, the U.S. Campaign to End the Israeli Occupation and Visualizing Palestine stated, quote, "A three-day mobile truck ad highlighting the devastating impact U.S. weapons have on Palestinians will follow AIPAC attendees during their conference and as they lobby members of Congress for more weapons for Israel. In addition, ads at three Washington, D.C. metro train platforms highlight the budgetary trade-offs of providing weapons to Israel at the expense of failing to fund local community needs." The U.S. campaign's national advocacy director, Josh Rubner, added, quote, "At a time when the sequester is cutting billions of dollars from programs to help those in need, it is grotesque that AIPAC is lobbying Congress this week for ever-increasing amounts of military aid to Israel, especially as these U.S. weapons are used by Israel in violation of U.S. laws to violate Palestinian human rights." Additionally, activists with Jewish Voice for Peace also launched a massive billboard campaign in the D.C. metro area. JVP stated in a press release that 100 billboards are carrying the ads which highlight, quote, the gap between AIPAC's peace-killing policy positions and most Jewish Americans. The ads display the faces of Jewish Americans who declare that, quote, AIPAC does not speak for me. In a press release, JVP's executive director, Rebecca Vilkommerson, stated, quote, AIPAC is the NRA of foreign policy lobbies, pushing a right-wing agenda that does not represent the majority of Jewish Americans. Its support for military buildup and endless settlement expansion makes peace impossible. It cannot claim to speak for all American Jews. To see the advertisements and to read more about these campaigns, go to our activism and BDS blog at electronicintifada.net. And that's it for our weekly Electronic Intifada podcast. For news, information, cultural features and reviews, pointed opinion and analysis, and action alerts by our team of correspondents and bloggers, visit us online at electronicintifada.net. This week, be sure to check out our newest features and blog posts, such as Canadian students challenge Harper's support for Israeli apartheid, war criminal Shimon Peres honored again by a European university, UK police abuse the so-called anti-terror law to abuse activists returning from Palestine, Goldsmith's lecturer smears campus activists as anti-Semites on an anti-boycott blog, UK students resist Israeli diplomats' campus offensive despite repression, SodaStream lies to keep its products on UK shelves. The Month in Pictures, our carefully curated look at the most significant moments of the last month in Palestine, and much more. At electronicintifada.net, you can also post comments and sign up for our daily newsletter. Follow us on Twitter at Intifada. Radio stations are free to use this podcast, and a special thanks to Flashpoints and KPFA in Berkeley. On behalf of all of us at the Electronic Intifada, thank you for listening. Thank you.